Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Hilda, the next morning, gave me some money to put in my pocket. Before I left, I went out and bought three things I remember well. I bought a better-looking pair of eyeglasses than the pair the prison had issued to me. And I bought a suitcase and a wristwatch. I thought since that without fully knowing it, I was preparing for what my life was about to become. Because those are three things I've used more than anything else. My eyeglasses correct the astigmatism that I got from all the reading in prison. I travel so much now that my wife keeps alternate suitcases packed so that when necessary I can just grab one. And you won't find anybody more time-conscious than I am. I live by my watch, keeping appointments. Even when I'm using my car, I drive by my watch, not my speedometer. Time is more important to me than distance.
Time! Oh, shit, don't tell me my niggas got lost in time. My niggas are dying before their time. My niggas are serving unjust time. My niggas are dying because of time.
Just going back to what you touched on with regards to jobs, I think you shared that you worked for many, many years, and just because of proximity, you were never late. Is that correct, Mr. Fuller?
Never late. I was 32 years on a job. I was never late.
Time! Do that one more time, just because we did have some audio issues as we began. Gus T. Renegade, Cows, Context of White Supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, November 6, 2019. So I have been told. Woo! Thought I was going to be cool and able to use my spiffy new headset, courtesy of my wish list at Amazon.com. Listed under Gus T. Renegade. Just cracked the box open. I had them on about an hour before we broadcast it, had tested them out. Wow. They sound so nice. Work so well. Had already dialed in. Boom, boom. Sound is coming through. Great. Awesome. Get ready to go live. Audio is not picking up for some reason, or it was kind of intermittent. It was quite odd. But backup headset is there. Hopefully I'll be able to figure it out and use the spiffy new headset tomorrow, because we should be here for the book club. Dr. Gerald Horn, his biography, Paul Robeson, The Artist as a Revolutionary. Same program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Retired firefighter who did reading for us last week. We just weren't able to get the file transfer system figured out. Got it corrected for this week. He did the narration for us for this week, and we will be using it. Henry in Chicago read for us last week, enjoying getting through the book and learning more about the life and times of Mr. Robeson. We'll actually hear an interview he did in 1958 on KPFA at the beginning of the segment tomorrow, which is fascinating. Hearing white people talk to other black people about racism pretty much in any time period is a fascinating study in counter-racism. But that's tomorrow. Let's see. Any other updates? Fire in the Canebrake. I just started reading. It is about the Moores Ford Bridge lynching in 1946. 8-month pregnant black female was killed in addition to 3 other people, 2 males, 2 females in total. The white author of the book, Fire in a Canebrake, Laura Wexler, she'll be on the program. She is now 2020. She is, I think, like the plaintiff in the case in trying to adjudicate the murderers of the Moores Ford Bridge lynching. But she should be on the program in a few days. I am reading the book now. Should be at your library if you want to do a little reading. Should be required study. Even if you don't read this book, you should definitely know about this case if you are a Georgia resident studying local, national, global history and events, but certainly local events. You can learn a lot about what it means to be white, system of white supremacy racism. With that, I have talked quite a bit over the past. It's almost difficult to conceive. It's been 2 years now that I have been practicing yoga regularly and, you know, even a instructor, now paid yoga instructor to teach at a studio. Like, it's just bizarre how all of that has happened and continued so consistently. Nothing is more consistent than the system of white supremacy racism. I have talked about a number of different incidents of terrorism that I've experienced. I talked about being kicked in class by a white woman who was tardy. I talked about the white man coming to class. We were doing the challenge to see how many classes that you could take during a month. And I went to do my check on the board. And this was someone I had never spoken to. I don't think I would recognize this person if I saw him today. But he looked me in my face and didn't say, "Oh, hey, how you doing, Gus? Good to see you." None of that. "How's teaching yoga going?" None of that. Just, "You make me sick." And then he took the marker and went to put his checks on the board. I've talked about that. I mean, it's in the archives. You can just start from almost day one of me doing yoga. I think after I came back on the air after the flood and I began talking about, you know, starting to do some yoga to try to de-stress. Imagine that, the folly. Do some yoga to de-stress. And the incidents and just how racism, white supremacy was manifest in my different yoga classes. I've taken probably about 1,500 of them at this point over the last 2 years. I practiced today, went in and did a slower yin practice, mostly very relaxing, non-white instructor, not a whole lot of people. I'm always thankful of that. But I have talked about a lot of different incidents over this 2 year period, pretty much. And I can only reiterate, I do have a report to write about a massive incident of white terrorism involving Anna Brown Griswold, Grinning Yogi Studio here in Seattle. Massive incident of white supremacy that illustrates pretty much all areas of people activity, all of the points. If anything, I should be boastful. I should be saying that, you know, this 2 years of practicing yoga has confirmed all of my views. Pretty much every stance that I have taken about white supremacy racism has been solidified by the conduct of the individuals classified as white that I have practiced yoga with over the past 2 years. Most of them white women, which is key because that is something that I have maintained, that white women are integral. You cannot have a system of white supremacy without white women. I have said you do not have a matriarchy. Excuse me, you don't have a patriarchy. The architect of the system of white supremacy, in my view, this is very much a white woman enterprise, but that's not even worth arguing about, grappling over. It is something I think to think about. They do say, who is the first teacher? I think that's a cliche I've heard often. That would apply to who teaches what racism, white supremacy is, what it means to be a white man, what it means to be a white woman. I think that applies to white mom, white dad. But be that as it may, equal partners. You wouldn't have a system of white supremacy without white women, white men. doing this together. And that has been super confirmed. White people are not ignorant about racism, white supremacy. I cannot speak for every single environment where yoga is practiced, but I can say for the Seattle region and perhaps the Washington area in total, the non-white people are super white identified. I would say that for the Washington area anyway, because there are not a lot of non-white people here. If you grew up here or you spent some of your formative childhood years here, even if you live here for a substantial amount of time, unless you are super informed and focused on white supremacy, racism, what it means to be white, and you have a code of conduct, you're probably going to be very white identified. You're probably going to be hanging out with white people. You'll have white friends, sexual activity with whites that you do not think of as racist. That'll probably be how you think, and you'll be resistant to thinking of these whites as racist. That is especially intense with all of the individuals, and I mean almost like no exceptions, the individuals who are not white who practice yoga in the Seattle area, maybe even the Washington state area in total, the white identification is astronomical. A lot of these, and I mean, you have to think like the yoga environment is kind of a elitist environment anyway. It can be kind of expensive. So that can right there, the price can exclude a lot of people. It is mostly white people. It is predominantly white women heavily. And so that can discourage, rightfully so, some people from wanting to be in that environment. It can be kind of odd, because if you don't know the poses, and it's Sanskrit, you know, Shavasana. So what are the downward facing dog, Adho Mukha Shavasana, like there's Sanskrit and stuff. They're not even talking English some of the time. So it can kind of be an intimidating environment. Racism being at the forefront, but for a lot of reasons, it can be kind of difficult to access and to acclimate, to be comfortable in that environment. But the non-white people are just super white identified. As I said, a lot of them, they have white parents, white partners, white friends, all of the above, emotional connections to white people and anti-blackness. Pam, the late, we used to say that white identified, sometimes it's just a different way of saying anti-blackness, because if you don't think of white people as being racist, if you don't think of them as being potential enemies, then you will generally not think very well of black people. You'll look at all of this and, you know, they're lazy and thuggish and blah, 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 dangerous, all the rest of it. Very, very common. Anyway, and I was saying very few exceptions to this. I've talked about this repeatedly over the years. The report that I have to write, that is a key part, non-white people, and I think almost everybody that I'll be mentioning in the report is in some sort of long-term sexual arrangement with a white person, married, engaged, sometimes both, or has a white parent, sometimes both. It's just really intense. But that report will be coming later. That's something that I've talked about in the archives in terms of non-white people and just expecting that. I think that can, at least for me, that has been helpful. Not going into these environments and thinking that they're going to be friends, even if they're black. Even if they're black, I talked about that, I think, last week on workplace racism, not thinking that we're going to be cool, even if they're another black male, not thinking that we're going to be cool, that we're going to be friends. I think I mentioned it about 2 years ago. This was about 2 months into my practice. It was a black male. He was in class. He looked, at that time, I didn't have any experience at all. So he looked experienced, and I was going to go up to talk to him after class. And I remember I had a banana. I was trying to get my fuel in. I was still really tubby at the time, so I was trying to correct my eating. So I'm eating my banana. I was going to go talk to him. And before I could even get my hand all the way out to try to shake his hand, a white woman came over, gave him a double kiss on the cheek, and they started talking. I said, wow. I remember I told a listener offline I had to swallow my banana and my pride. That has happened frequently to me in the yoga environment, where I went to talk to someone who was, man, I can give you another one. I didn't talk about this. This was, I think, like October, November of last year, about a year ago this time, non-white female who ended up becoming a yoga instructor. And she said, because she talked to Gus, because I encouraged her, and racism, white supremacy, the only way we will not have to deal with this is if we get more non-white instructors, then we don't have to worry about white people doing the teaching. We can do our own thing. It'll be great, and racism won't be a problem in the class. Teach. Be an instructor. And she went ahead and did it, and she said, I might not have done it. I needed that extra push. She was coming to thank me, like, and I think this was maybe 2 days after she graduated teacher training. And I was saying, oh, you would have done it anyway, blah, blah, blah. And she was going to say, no, what you said, before she could get it out, a white woman literally burst in between us. And, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I haven't seen. And gives her the biggest hug. And, oh, I just, I'm bracing. I immediately turned and walked out. She was, oh, wait a minute, Gus, where are you going? It's like, oh, I'm good. I'm getting out of here. But, I mean, that's what I expect, and it helps me to be prepared for that. I talk about that in workplace racism so that I'm not disgruntled. But that has been a conclusion that I've talked about for a long time in terms of the conduct of non-white people, it being anti-black, white identified. Any other major conclusions? Voltron effect, absolutely. Unjust networking, absolutely. White people and their attention to words. I was so... There are many commonalities that are surprising between yoga and counter-racism. Attention to words is one that I was not expecting, but a lot, especially once you get into teaching yoga, oh man, a whole lot of it becomes about being very precise with your words. Anyway, the report forthcoming will have a lot of the conclusions about white supremacy, racism, in addition to how I personally have been terrorized throughout this, some of which the abuse came from Anna Brown Griswold, admitted racist who was a guest on the Cows. That's another important point that'll be in the report as well, but that is forthcoming. This broadcast is about a specific incident of anti-blackness that I experienced, an assault in a Sunday morning yoga class. Put that in for emphasis. I know for some people, they call it the Sabbath. That is considered, you know, sacred time, holy. Not for everyone. I know for some people it's the previous day and that sort of thing. But, you know, for some folks, church is happening Sunday, specific Sunday at 9 a.m. For a lot of folks, church is going down. Even if you're in a different time zone, if you're on the East Coast, that would be noon. Church is still going on for a lot of folks at that time. So, racism, white supremacy, the strongest religion on the planet, bar none. One bit of detail I do need to include about this class, this incident, just for context. This specific Sunday morning class, I've been taking Sunday morning yoga pretty much since I started practicing. I would go and practice on Sunday morning. I guess if I could give a quick side note, someone who grew up on the East Coast in what they call the so-called Bible Belt, I'm not sure you could have a Sunday morning practice. I don't know if I would be able to get up and go do yoga at 8 or 9 a.m. Yeah, that's neither here nor there, just thinking randomly, continuing. But I've been doing Sunday morning yoga pretty consistently for about 2 years. And so this specific class I've been taking for since August, since the very beginning of August. And this specific class became significant because I was sick over the summer. I was with helping a black mom take care of her two children while the father was out of town. And they got sick. Some of their playmates got sick. They got sick. The mom got sick. I got sick. It was like, you know, a total plague. And I was sick for about 3 weeks. And then I got sick again. And I think I pretty much was sick for most of the end of this summer. And during the first bout of this illness, I was not able to practice for about 2 weeks, which is, you know, massive to me. In the scale of white supremacy, that's insignificant. But in terms of my yoga practice, like, that is massive. I had not had that long of a delay or layoff in my practice at all since I started practicing yoga. And I was so ready to get back to practicing once I felt, you know, better. And this was the first class that I took once I was able to get back feeling good. It was back in the summertime, so it was, you know, warm and glorious Seattle summer weather. And this is a rooftop Sunday morning yoga class, which is why I was especially excited to get back on my mat. It was outside. It was in the sun. It was, you know, oh, and you get the whole, if you haven't been to Seattle, I mean, it's, I am a sucker for any type of rooftop yoga in Seattle in the summer. It's so scenic. It's majestic. You have the water. You can see Mount Rainier. You can see the Seattle skyline, the Space Needle. It's just, it's incredible. If you're up, you know, pretty high. This hotel where the yoga is on the rooftop, it's not even up that high. I have been on, you know, rooftops that are up significantly higher where it's an even better view, but it's still pretty good. Anyway, so that's why it has some significance. I talked about the first time that I went because I was there practicing. I didn't know the instructor before the class. I was just happy to be back on my mat. She came up and said, "Oh, man, we've practiced together a bunch at a different studio. I remember you. You wear that shirt. What does it say? Please treat me like I'm a white person." I said, "Oh, yes, that would be I." And it was right at that point where we were at the T-shirt. "You wear that T-shirt to class." A different white person came up and said, "Oh, yes, we practiced together. I remember you." And then he went to, "Oh, man, they talked about how they terrorized you at the studio," which I'll be writing in the report. And I corrected him like, "No, you're not even giving all of the information correctly." And we talked and I told her, I said, "Racism easily has been the biggest problem in my practice. And I got to a point where I didn't even want to practice with white people. I've been practicing on my own privately, just at home. Or I would go to the park or someplace where I'm still by myself, where I don't have to be around white people and their terrorist antics." We talked about this after the very first class that I took with her on the rooftop in August. So fast forward to November, I had been practicing there every Sunday, and I had a whole little routine with this. Seattle is so amazing in the summertime. This is like literally in the middle of downtown Seattle where this rooftop yoga is. So from there, there's a farmer's market literally blocks away on Sunday. So I would go there. I would go to the farmer's market to get, you know, blueberries, raspberries, all of the wonderful fresh produce the area has to offer. There's libraries galore, parks galore, just a whole little day. So I would go do yoga, go to the farmer's market, go hang out. Maybe we would go cook, hang out at the park, get work done, all of the above. Whole little routine for the day that would start with, let's do a little yoga and then go from there. So that's been the routine since August. This Sunday, I go in. They turn the clocks back. Time. They turn the clocks back this past Sunday. And in fact, before we even go any further, the significance, we did start with Minister Malcolm X. And he talked about having that watch. I think he was notorious for being punctual, emphasizing the importance of time. I think there are anecdotes about him. If he had an appointment, if he was going to meet you at 7:30, 8:30, he would be, you know, maybe walking up the doorstep at 7:29. Wait on the porch a few seconds and then boop, right at 7:30, ring the doorbell or knock on the door. There are stories where he was notorious for that. The importance of being timely. Mr. Fuller, you heard that, which is, I don't even know what to, that is codification. Words are important. 32 years and I was never late. That is codification. That is the essence of codification. I have figured out this thing about time for work. It will never be, "Well, Fuller, we were thinking about giving you this raise, but it looks like you about 10 years ago came in 15 seconds late and we just can't have tardy niggers." 32 years on time every day. Codification and the important recognizing the importance of time. He talks about that. Be on time. Get a reputation for being on time. And I've talked about with my yoga practice for a long time, being on time, that is something that I am proud of more than anything. Whatever certifications or postures I can do, being on time that I have taken in the neighborhood, literally, of about 1,500 studio yoga classes, not on my own, where you have to actually go to, you know, a facility and take a class, approximately 1,500 of them over the past 2 years. And I think I have been late to maybe four classes, maybe. It is not codified like Mr. Fuller. He was going to the same location every time. I am going to different locations throughout the area four times, working to make sure that there is no five. Being on time and getting a reputation for being on time. Super important. And it's not even yet. That's something that I apply on and off the mat. If we talk about this program, starting on time, we were late today by a couple minutes, but I said we were having audio difficulties. I was ready to start exactly when we were supposed to. New headset, thought the audio was working. It was not. But I think anyone who has been listening, if the program start time is supposed to be 5, generally speaking, we are not on at 5:10, 5:15, 5:30, unless there have been, you know, some sort of other circumstances or something, you know, broke, something malfunctioned. Generally, we are ready to roll at the time that we say. Mr. Fuller talked about that one aspect of counter-racism. We can figure out a code to be on time for white people. Make sure we figure out a code to be timely when we have appointments with black people, because he said we sometimes don't have the same value for black people, black life. So we will not make sure that we're on time if we have an appointment with this black person, to not do that, that's counter-racism right there. And I would just say a key aspect of counter-racism in general, value your time. I almost included the segment with Dr. John Henrik Clark, where he talked about one of the huge lessons of life for him was not wasting time. There were so many people who wasted his time with nonsense and trivial things when he had so many important things to address, solving our problem. And so if you are a black person in particular, male, female, of any age, be really miserly about your time, how you invest your time, how other people use your time, what other people want your time for. Really watch that. I say all the time with this program, if it is worthy, I hope it is worthy of your time and energy. I say that all the time with sincerity. Really think about that on a regular basis. The system of white supremacy is designed to either waste our time or have us directly investing our time to strengthen their system. Make sure as much of our time as we can is being applied to constructive things, solving problems, counter-racist concepts. That alone will go a long way to solving this problem. Value your time. Now we can proceed. So Sunday morning, I get in to do 9 a.m. yoga, get to class. I speak to the instructor, white woman, suspected racist. And I normally will speak to her when I see her for each class. I come in, speak to her, get my stuff down, mat area, blah, blah, blah. They have another facilitator. She's with the hotel. Speak to her. Her daughter actually was at class the week before, so I met her daughter there as well. Speak to her, right on. Go sit down, get set up for class. Class starts at 9. Roughly around somewhere in the neighborhood of 9:07, 9:10, a like horde of like three or four people like burst into the room. Now, like two to three weeks ago, they began a policy of locking the door at 9 and saying, hey, it's crowded and it's a distraction to have people coming in 5, 10, 15 minutes after class has started and it's crowded, and then trying to squeeze an extra person or two in. Sometimes that means, you know, an entire row has to get up and shift, and that's just time. time. You're wasting other people's time. You're wasting our time, and we don't have a whole lot of space. So if you can't get here before 9, you're out of luck. So they tried that, but then people knocked on the door, which was just another distraction. So they didn't do that. So this past Sunday, 3-4 people, they come in like 8-10 minutes after class has started. And like almost all of them come over to the area where I am. I generally get there early so that I can get a spot. I don't like being around a lot of people. I've talked about that before. I'm a black male. I'm not interested in being accused of reckless eyeballing or anything else. And I just don't like, you know, touching people. I like to be able to have enough space where I can do the postures and not, you know, be brushing up against other people. They say all the time, if you take yoga classes, you'll hear, or at least in this area, maybe they don't say it if you take yoga classes in like Arkansas or Washington, D.C., London, I don't know. But here, they will say, like if you're going to do a posture sometimes where you're spreading your arms out wide, like in a T shape, or if you're going to take your leg out wide off your mat space and you might bump up against someone, they'll say, oh, we're all friends. Don't worry about it if you bump into your neighbor. And in my mind, every time, we are not friends. This is someone classified as white, or just like I said, this is someone classified as not white who is also not my friend, not my neighbor. You see that white friend that they got with them on the mat, or their white fiance, or whatever it is. We're not friends. I don't want to touch them, and I don't want them touching me. So the folks come in, and they all come over to my area. I'm very annoyed. In fact, I stopped practicing. And this had happened, I think, last week as well, where I said, you know, I don't need to practice here. I'm an instructor. I can practice on my own. And I teach at a studio at this point. Any yoga instructor, if you teach at a studio, you can practice at the studio whenever, as much as you want. That's part of the so-called benefits of teaching at a studio. So it's like, you know, I have lots of options other than coming here to practice and be annoyed where people come late. At the studio where I teach, the doors, I'm teaching tomorrow. What happens when I teach? The class starts at 6. The door for the class is locked at 5:59. So if you come 10 minutes late, you will not be getting in the class. That is the case at many, many yoga studios. So the folks come in, most of them white, one of them non-white female, and they all hoard in on my area. As I said, I stopped practicing. I scooch over a little bit, but I am close to the wall, and I do that deliberately because that minimizes the amount of people I can be next to. You can't be where the wall is. So that's, you know, I can take being next to the wall. I'd much rather that than be next to a person. However, I'm not going to be all the way on the wall. That's why I say I minimize how far I'm going to go over. Like it gets to a certain point. It's like, all right, not moving over anymore. You need to move or be someplace else. So I got to where I'm not moving over anymore. And in front of me, I don't have my sound effect ready because I have my notes, but cowbell. In front of me, there's a non-white female, so-called Asian, and a white man. And they look like they are at minimum friends, likely in some sort of sexual arrangement, tragic arrangement. I don't want to be close to them either. So I have enough distance where I feel like, okay, I won't be kicked by them, and I just don't want to be close either. And I guess also to add, the Asian female did have on a more risque outfit, I'll say, that was a little bit more revealing than what most of the other people in class had on as well. I generally don't want to be very close to females when they're wearing that sort of outfit as well. Goes back to what I said before. I don't want to be accused of reckless eyeballing or anything else. You can be over there, I'll be over here, and cool in the gang. So when I don't move anymore, the non-white female is like, hey, what's going on? Move over there. And I just turned and I looked at her and, you know, continued to set. Disgruntled at this point because they've distracted me from my practice, and they're hoarding in on my area. And now, you know, trying to demand that I get really close to these other people. And so the non-white female is like, oh, it's not going to move. So she, you know, gets her space in, and the other folks, they move a little bit to accommodate her. And then she makes like another snide remark. Now, I thought about turning around to say something right then, but said, you know, I'm going to calm down. I'll reevaluate if I want to, you know, even continue to come to this space to practice, but I'm not going to say anything now. However, I am going to say something at the end of class. And this non-white female, she's I definitely do not think she would be able to, quote unquote, pass as a white person. And I'd say she is a non-white female, so-called Indian, like the area of the world next to Pakistan, India. I'd say that would be my guess. And if I was to give complexion, she looked like she was maybe a little bit lighter than President Obama. Maybe just a little bit, just a little bit. So, and I get sizing is important too. Make sure I get that in. I'll get that in as we proceed. So she makes her snide remarks. I'm not going to say anything now. I'll wait till we get to the end of class. We get to the end of class. And I mean immediately. As soon as she says, all right, Shavasana is over and she's going to give notes. I rolled over. I'm on all fours. I don't stand all the way up, but I'm on all fours. And I look at her and I say, ma'am, if you have concerns about the spacing in class, you should arrive on time. And she looks at me like, what? And it was the same type of expression. If you remember when I talked about the time where the white woman suspected racist kicked me in the head in class after she came in late and hoarded on my space when there was ample space. This was a crowded class Sunday. The time the white woman kicked me, there was a lot of space. If she had came to class on time, there was no reason at all for her to be all close on in my area. Anyway, so she had the same look as the white woman. The white woman, when I turned around and told her about being on time, and she just looked at me. She didn't say anything, but she just looked at me like, this nigga just sassed me. This non-white, non-black female had the same look. She just didn't hold it as long. And then she immediately began, rah, 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 what do you mean? Rah, 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 you got all that space. Why don't you, rah, rah, rah. And so she does all this, and I let her. Oh, and she says, yeah, I came late for the class. So what? Deal with it. Rah, rah, rah. And she does all this, and she gets to the end. And I paused, and I said, if you have concerns about the space in class, you should arrive on time. She looks at me with total disgust. I heard you say that before. Don't say that to me again. You're not going to sit here and run. It's yoga class on a Sunday. And she's doing all this, you know, she does the same thing. I wait for her to finish. If you have concerns about the space in class, perhaps you should arrive on time. She looks at me and she says, if you say that to me again, I'm going to report you. Woo! We literally are about 2 minutes out of Shavasana. Like, relax. All of the like cliches that if you can associate or if you do associate any cliches with yoga and it's supposed to be calm and relaxing and, you know, floating away on a cloud of bliss. If that's what you think of yoga, it's supposed to happen at Shavasana. That's how you're supposed to feel. And especially once you come out like, oh, I feel wonderful. Could just float away. All of that was gone. I was ready to brawl at this point. I mean, it was total Floyd Mayweather, Canelo Alvarez, like, let's get down. Like, I could hear, like, Cal's listeners' voices, like, wow, she is totally trying you, Gus. Like, wow. I paused, and I'll even pause here because this sort of thing happens all the time. There's nothing special about this at all in terms of someone being sassy, rude, curt to a black person. That happens every day, all day long. Frequently, it's other black people doing the nasty and rudeness. So that's all day. You should have a code about how you deal with that, too. And most of the time, I try to keep these exchanges as short as possible. Minimize contact. That's what Mr. Fuller says. Minimize contact. Let's come to a resolution and or make this as short as possible. We're not trying to save face. We're not trying to get points. You know, getting rowdy back with this victim of racism is not going to help us solve the problem. It's not going to make Sunday morning any better. It's not helping my yoga practice. I mean, that's like the practical way to look at these things, even though it is frustrating, and she did greatly pluck my nerves. So I was able to pause, and I think that's so important when these type of situations happen with a white person or a non-white person to not let things get out of hand. Because I think this situation, and I guess I did not emphasize the exact way that I have been saying, ma'am, if you have concerns about the space in class, perhaps you should arrive on time. That is the exact volume, tone, everything. That is the exact way that I said it to her. I think this could have been a very different situation. I was the only black person in this class. There were other males, but only black person. Obviously, the only black male, mostly white women. Even though this was with a non-white female, non-white, non-black female, it could have been a very different situation. If you got concerns about the class, I mean, totally different response. I think the white women may have responded differently. It could have been, you know, I might not have been here to recount this event. So she says, you say that again, I'm going to report you. I do for a moment, like, what? Woo! I pause, collect myself. I summon my James Earl Jones. I clear my throat. I hit my chest. I looked her in her eyes and said, ma'am, if you have concerns about the space in class, perhaps you should arrive on time. And then immediately, and I mean as soon as I hit the last syllable in the word time, I immediately got up and reported her to the instructor and told her she harassed me after she came to class late, and then she threatened me. And then after I reported her to the instructor, I went to the hotel staff member whose daughter I met and said the same thing. Pointed her out. This female in the corner came to class late. She harassed me, and then she threatened me. She said, oh, I'll handle it. I go back over to the corner. Now, at this point, other people, this is a crowded class. I'm not here to count, but it's probably, it's probably 50 people in this class, give or take 10. So it's a substantial number of people in the corner where this is taking place. We're in the back rear corner where this is taking place. There are 3, 4, 5 other white women who have heard this exchange. As I said, when this non-white female came in late, there were about 2 or 3 other white women who came in late with her, and they all came to my area. So as this exchange happened, and I said the same thing every time, concerns about, blah, 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 I think at least 2 other white women, while this was going on, the white woman who was directly next to me who came in late said, oh, I came in late too. I'm so sorry if I disturbed you. Another white woman chimed in. I came in late as well. I'm sorry if I disrupted your practice. I hope you have a better Sunday. And she walked off. This was while the non-white female was still in her attitude. So I've reported her. I go back. I'll pause right there to say, I think the A-plus response, as soon as she said, if you say that again, I'm going to report you, I would have done it the opposite way. I would have went to report her immediately at that point, and then I would have come back and said, if you have concerns about class, I would have said it again after I had already reported her. I think I would have done it that way, just in case, but, you know, just try to make improvements as you go. So I go back over. The yoga instructor, who is a suspected racist female, and the hotel faculty member, also a suspected racist female, they go confront this non-white female about what has taken place, and they have a long exchange in the front of the class. And in the meantime, I had my yoga shorts on. I go change, put my pants on. I did have my "Please treat me like I am a white person" shirt. I did not have it on while this exchange was happening. By the time I reported her and they began talking to her, I went and was able to get my shirt on. And I'm waiting for them to come back and let me know what's going to be the result of all this. Now, I'm thinking it could be anything. I'm a black male. It could be, you know, he shook his penis at me during class. He threatened to steal my phone. He shook his penis at me while he threatened to steal my phone. anything. I'm waiting in the corner. Most of the folks have left. They finally come over. The non-white female comes back. She looks disgusted and she's stomping off. And so they say, the white woman comes over who's with the hotel, and she says, well, I'm of the opinion that respect begins with being on time. I literally fell back against the wall. I was absolutely stunned. I am not accustomed to white people responding in this way. Excuse me. I am not accustomed to anyone, white people or non-white people, responding to me in that manner, which to me almost seems logical. I'm not expecting that at all. I was not expecting that from them at all. Like I said, I was expecting it to be, well, she said, you shook your penis at her and tried to steal her. That's what I was expecting. Not, well, I think respect begins with being on time. I will add that yoga does have rules. It is not just, you know, wacky postures to twist and do all these goofy things. There are rules. The postures, that is like the newest, or yeah, really one of the newest components of what we call yoga. The earliest components about what yoga is all about, the yamas and niyamas, these are codes that are supposed to govern how you treat other people and even how you behave, how you treat yourself. And number one, ahimsa, no harm. So that's why I said it's a lot of overlap between yoga and counter-racism. But also on that list, if folks remember Satya X, she has the Women of Color Yoga Retreat in Costa Rica. She was a guest on the program last year. Satya X. Satya is one of those core principles of yoga, meaning truth. It's supposed to be about honesty. That's why I said a lot of overlap between counter-racism. Also, one of the principles is asteya. Non-theft, not supposed to be about stealing. A lot of overlap between counter-racism. That's one of Mr. Fuller's 10 stops. Additionally, some of these concepts go beyond just the, oh, I'm not going to steal those grapes. Oh, I'm not going to steal your blanket. Oh, I won't steal, you know, $50,000 from you. Non-theft also means time theft. And this was explained to me in my 200-hour teacher training by a non-white instructor, no less. And he said, being late. If you are showing up late and other people are having to catch you up on activities or compensate for your tardiness, they're having to do extra work because of you, that is time theft. That is a form of asteya, or a violation of asteya, rather, right there, because you're stealing time from other people where they're having to use their time and energy to compensate for you. That resonated with me huge and sounded very much like some of what I would think of in terms of counter-racist concepts. Be on time. Value your time and energy. But that really resonated with me, and I have explained that concept to others, asteya, in terms of valuing time and not being late because that's stealing time from other people. I have explained it to other people who have a habit of being late and how disruptive that is for other people and why we should try to be mindful about that to be timely. So these white women, they come and they say, respect begins with being on time. And so she says, now, I was telling the female who I reported, she says, I was telling her that, you know, it is helpful that people can be on time. That way we don't have to do all this shifting around. It's a lot of people and it really can disrupt class. And she says, well, you know, he's going to make a big deal about me being late when he got here 1 minute before I did. Now, the white hotel faculty member, she tells me this, and she says, well, I told her immediately, ma'am, that is not accurate. That gentleman has been coming here for months and practicing, and he gets here early every class, just like he did today. So what you just said is not accurate. Now, at this point, I told you when she came over and she said, respect begins with being on time, I fell back against the wall. When she said, she has made up this lie and said that she just got here, and I told her that that's not accurate. Blah, blah, blah. At this point, I did a forward fold, Uttanasana. Forward fold, because I was totally exasperated, like, wow. Not only do you come to class late and harass me, you threaten me, and then you already are getting your lies together to go with your report that I just got here a minute before you. And even for context, right? Let me tell you what I did this morning. So I got up, I arrived there for class. Class starts at 9 o'clock. This is the amount of time, how much I was able to do before class actually started at 9 a.m. I got there. I didn't bring a yoga mat because they have yoga mats, and I already told you I intended to go to the farmer's market and do lots of other things. I don't like lugging a yoga mat to all of those types of events, so I'll get a yoga mat that's there. So I got my yoga mat, got the sanitizer, gave it a comprehensive scrubbing, not one of those 10-second jobs. Saw the suspected racist yoga instructor, spoke to her. Saw the hotel faculty member, spoke to her. Early morning class, I brought my electric toothbrush. I go to the restroom and brush my teeth. The deep cleanse cycle, not a 30-second deal. I don't come in my yoga clothing because it's cold outside, so I change clothes after I brush my teeth. Come back in. Now that I've changed, get on my mat, I do my ab routine. They generally don't do an ab routine in this class. It's only an hour. I do that before we get started. And then I come down and relax and join them for the 9 o'clock start. That's how much I was able to do before class actually started because I got there early. So after I had done all of that, class starts at 9, and then 8 minutes later, this terrorist non-white female arrives with her threatening and lying and all the rest of it. So anyway, the white one says, yeah, I, you know, immediately told her it's not accurate. I don't like people coming in and you know, being starting things on a Sunday morning. It's great if we can have balance, you know, if you can accommodate and try to move. But I mean, she said at the end of it, next week, we're going to lock the door at 9. If you're here at 9:05 or 9:10, we're going to have a sign on the door that says catch us next week. I say, fine. That's great. Pack up my belongings and exit. The whole time, I'm just thinking, wow, this non-white female is, I'm going to say 130 pounds. I'm, you know, guessing, so I could be off. But she's not a huge person by any stretch. This is not some hulking female we're talking about. She looked like she was probably 5'5", you know, like this is not some huge female. That is Gus T with the social media feeds to promote this specific episode. That is me doing the headstand, and I shared that photo for a reason so you can get some idea of the scale of my size physically. I am over 6 feet tall. I'm over 200 pounds, in relatively good shape. I had just done 20 push-ups in front of her, biceps out, didn't have a shirt on. Is she intimidated? Is she thinking, oh my gosh, that is the black male. He is going to put me in the headlock, and oh my goodness, I'm going to die and be raped right here on a Sunday morning. Not at all. Oh, she did not flinch. There was not the least bit of, oh my God, this nigga could kill me. He could eat me. It was nigga hush. Are you still talking? Nigga hush. Are you still talking? I'll report. And I mean, even that right there, I'll report. I mean, she said that with such authority that that's going to be the end of it, that you are a nigger and you already know. I can have all kinds of powerful white people, even powerful non-white people, here in a second to tell them that you did something and it will be believed. That, oh yeah, whatever it is, you did. What did I just say? He shook his penis at me. He stole my cell phone. He shook his penis at me while he stole my cell phone, in addition to not moving when I asked him to after I came to class late. He'd be like, yep, well, that'll be the charge. We're going to charge this nigga with being militant at the yoga class. And he shook his penis at her, and he stole his phone, and he wouldn't move. Okay, log him up, and we'll take him on off to jail. Won't even get to see the Seahawks game. They were playing that day, too. Yes, they were playing. Won't even get the Seahawks game. You'll be locked up. You'll have to root on Russell Wilson from behind bars. I think the jail is close to where the Seahawks play. But I thought of that the vulnerability. And I've said that before, particularly in that environment, because if it had been a situation where I had not been composed and yelled at her, uh-oh, and those white women felt fearful instead of, oh, my gosh, I did come in late. I'm sorry if that disturbed you. Oh, my gosh, the Negro. Oh, he's going to kill her. He's going to kill me, too. He's going to rape us all. Like, you know, I just feel like it's so many ways that that could have gone bad. And the fact that she was upset for whatever reason, she may have had other things going on, victim of racism, who knows. But she was upset. I was upset. It never popped into my mind, I am going to threaten her. If you say another word to me, I'm going to call the police. I'm going to go get security. Like, you have one more thing to say to me, and I'm going to go, you know, get some serious authorities to deal with you immediately. Like, that never occurred to me, much less I am going to lie. Like, if you don't stop talking to me right now, I am going to start making up lies so that I can accuse you of something really big and get you in big trouble. Even though I know I'm lying, just because you got on my nerves, I'm going to start making up lies. I mean, that would never. Okay. Even when I was confused about racism, white supremacy, it would not be in my mind to start doing that. Apparently, with black people, and I would say especially with black males, not that it can't happen to you with anybody else, but I mean, wow, it is immediate. I went to Dr. Curry's book. I went back to look at The Man Knot. I say especially for black males because so much of it is people, they fear you. You got all this black male privilege and people are afraid of the big, brawny black male. That is not the case at all. They got that video. It was a black male substitute teacher who was huge. He looked like he was over 6 feet tall, over 200 pounds. And they had a white child who was under 14 years old, got up, stood in his face and called him a nigger without flinching. All of that, Willie Horton, O.J. Simpson, I don't care who you are. What's the big guy's name? I don't do all that TV watching, but he just reported that he had been sexually molested by a white man in Hollywood. He was huge. He looked like he was 300 pounds. Nobody cares. Nobody is intimidated of black males. White children are not intimidated. White females are not intimidated. White men are not intimidated. Nobody is afraid of worthless black males. It's just, you are a heartbeat away from being accused of a crime, whether you did it or not. It'll take me about 5 seconds to fabricate something, and frequently it will be believed. You might have served, what they say about Timothy Cole, he got a statue. You might have served 11 years in prison and died before we realized, whoops, whoops, looks like Timothy Cole did not rape that white woman. Sorry, we will build you a statue. Isn't it cool? In the archives, Timothy Cole down in Texas accused of raping a white woman. He did not. Veteran as well, he'd served in the military. But acutely, and I mean, like, that's why I said so many times, I've said that for specifically the yoga environment, but I mean, it would be the same on or off the mat, the specific vulnerability, and particularly in an environment that seems so frequently to cater to timid white women who say, well, they're frail, and, you know, we have to do certain things to make sure that they feel safe. Like, they'll say specific cues, like, at the beginning of some classes, you'll stand up. And so you'll just be standing, they'll call standing at attention, they'll call it samasthitihi, standing at attention. And that's how you can close your eyes, set an attention for class. If you're not comfortable closing your eyes, you can just soften your gaze. They'll say that for a lot of different poses. For Shavasana, you're laying on your back at the end of class, and so they'll say you can close your eyes. If that's not comfortable, if you don't feel comfortable closing your eyes in a room full of strangers, you can keep them open and just, you know, kind of try to relax as best you can so you're not staring intently. But there is a lot of empathy and explicit attention on making sure that white women feel safe, feel comfortable, that if they have any sense of vulnerability, that that is nurtured, acknowledged, and it's okay, and we'll make sure that you feel supported so that that's not something that's going to bother you in class. For black people, that is not the case at all. And I would say for myself as a black male, it is downright hostility. Like, what are you doing here? This environment is not for you at all. You're not even supposed to be here. Like, that is generally much more the feeling that I have experienced as opposed to any sort of welcome or whatever the case may be, inclusion, any other nonsense words that they'll throw around in talking about yoga. But that did happen. I did want to make sure that I emphasized, I think this could have happened with a black person. As I said, most of the all, practically no exceptions of the non-white people, black or no, that I have had contact with in this area in terms of practicing yoga, the white identification has been there. I think I've said repeatedly for some of the instances that I've had happen in yoga class, if it had been a non-white instructor, things could have went really bad. The non-white people are that anti-black. They're that white identified. They very much cater to white people in this space. So it could have been a black person and the same thing could have happened. Could have been a white person and the same thing could have happened. I do not intend on practicing in this space anymore, just for a variety of reasons. The non-white female could come back anytime and start the whole antics again. And I'm not really interested in being in an environment where something like that, you know, my fate has to be in the hands of a white woman to see how they, or a pair of white women to see how they adjudicate something that has taken place in class. If I'm going to be believed, you know, this situation, I guess I was benefited from having practiced there for so long that I had known these folks for some time, or at least they had seen me. It's not like we'd had coffee together or anything like that, but at least they had seen me coming there frequently, weekly for some time. And the instructor, we had practiced together for some time. So at least we had a minor bit of rapport. But I mean, that easily could be the case in a class where I don't know the instructor and we don't have a rapport. And then what? Hazards of being a victim of racism, white supremacy. Again, I think it is crucial having a code. Mr. Fuller talked about that, when these little skirmishes and things happen, to just kind of have in mind what do you want accomplished, and to really try to think about that each time you open your mouth to say something, especially if you feel like you've gotten upset, you know, you're a little riled up, to try to get some breaths in. That was something that I tried to do, to make sure that I was getting some breaths in, and to just think, you know, what is it that I want to get accomplished in this situation? As I said, you know, thinking back on it, I probably, the last time that I said, if you have concerns about space, I would have just went to report her before saying that the last time, if I said it at all. But just really trying to be mindful so that it doesn't become something that's driven totally by emotion or saving face or trying to put someone in their place. We're all still on the slave ship, so it's probably not likely that anything that you say or do in the course of these little small dust-ups is going to solve any problems. We don't want it to be anything that we look back on with regret years later, or have any serious problems emerge from these little, you know, random dust-ups. Just trying to get through them as efficiently and as painlessly as possible without new problems being created. That's the goal. At least that's what I think seems logical for those types of situations. And I just say the same thing that I say for workplace racism on a regular basis. I always think it is logical, helpful to not be thinking that other non-white people are going to be our friends, teammates, partners at arms, any of that, because that frequently is not the case. White supremacists have been very effective at conditioning how we think and respond to each other. If I had been a white person, white man or white woman, I think her conduct would have been radically different. I cannot possibly conceive of her saying, if I had done exactly what I did and was just someone who is white, I can't think of her saying, I'm going to report you, and then start, you know, fabricating lies to make her accusation against me seem more intense. I don't think she would have done that. I don't think she would have, her thinking would have been, I could just make up any old charge against him and it'll likely be believed if I was a white person. I think she would have expected more resistance, especially as a non-white person doing this. I don't think her conduct would have been the same. That's why I wear that shirt all the time, whether I'm around white people or non-white people, because it applies. It's equally applicable. Let's see. But yeah, I will not be practicing there any further. And if I see the white instructor, I'm going to remind her of our first conversation when I started taking her class about how I've been treated as a black male, that, yeah, even though this was a non-white female who threatened me, harassed me, lied on me, who did all of these things, came to class late, I don't think she would have behaved that way if I was a white person. This is very indicative of how I've been treated as a black male in the yoga space. I don't know too many I don't know too many white people who have been threatened in a yoga space. I have, on a Sunday morning, no less. Let's see. Is anything? Oh, and staying calm, emphasizing that as well, I think is super important. Staying codified in your tone. I was speaking loud enough, as I said, that other white people heard me and began apologizing for being late, but I was not yelling. When the white woman kicked me, I eventually did have to yell, "Stop talking to me." But that was what I kept saying, "Stop talking to me." I really think that can be an important one as well. Just control of your voice, what you say, and how you say it. I think the more control that you have, the more effective you can be. And it all just all relates to being precise, precise with my tone, precise with the words that I choose, precise with my cadence, even how fast that I'm speaking. Because I did the slow talk on her the last time when she threatened me. I made sure this is going to be super slow. This is going to be the slowest sentence of the morning. Let's see. Oh, and yeah, we're not trying to save points. If there are some situations where the last time where she said, "If you say that again, I'm going to report you," I probably would have remained mute. If it had been an enforcement official, I would have remained mute. If it had been a non-white person in some situations, I may not have said anything. Like I said, and that situation, the A-plus response may have been, as soon as she said that, to not say anything else, to just go and report her immediately. So not about saving face, it's just about solving problems and trying to get through these incidents of discourteousness with as much ease as we can, some level of codification so that it's just not your rage in the moment that's kind of leading you through what you do, if that makes sense. If folks have any thoughts, questions, suggestions, certainly if anything does not make sense, you can feel free to share 605-313-5164, be code 564-943#. Press *61 if you have any thoughts or questions. This section did remind me of Dr. Curry's The Man Knot. We read it. It's in the book club. You can go back in the archives to check it out. Reading is more important than watching television. He writes, "Black male death, despite its horror and gruesomeness, is tolerated within America, whereas the violation of other bodies is thought to be too unsightly to be seen. The dead bodies of black males are circulated, shared, and memed with little hesitation. Many in our society accept this reality as a norm, but what effect does death have on the lives, the mental concept of the self that black males formulate in this violent world? How do black males regard the future in a world that is so limited by the present?" Question. To be a black male is to live in constant fear of being accused of some offense against another. Black men live in a world where any accusation against them is thought to be evidence of their guilt. Definitely felt that this past Sunday morning at yoga. 605-313-5164, the code 564-943#. Press *61 if you have thoughts, questions. If I did not explain something well, feel free. If you have any suggestions on what you think might be a better way of having dealt with this type of situation, if it's, you know, if you're that picky about being super close to people in class, you just shouldn't practice publicly. That might be true. And as I said, I will not be going back to practice in that space. If folks have any other thoughts about the best way to handle those type of incidents. I'll hit the phone lines. I'll just take a second to play Mr. Williams' commercial to promote counter-racism.com, just because his name had been mentioned recently several times on the program, and he has been a big supporter of the program for such a long time. Counter-racism.com commercial, and then we'll hit the phone line.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? CounterRacism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
I just want to add one more thought before we get to the phone lines. I mentioned I did not want to move forward in this class. There was an Asian female, so-called, with a white male directly in front of me. If I had moved forward, I'd have been closer to them. I didn't want to be too close to them or anyone else for that matter. And one of the reasons, the Asian female, she had on a more revealing outfit. And I said I didn't want to be too close to her. I don't like being close to females who wear more revealing outfits in yoga class, period. That is a part of my code, Bill Cosby. I have said consistently for the 2 years that I have been practicing, I have seen not every female, but I have seen a number of females, white and non-white, who wear whatever they want to yoga class. If that's a bikini top, sports brassiere, whatever it is, wear what they want. They do their thing. They are getting down in class. I do not wear a shirt in yoga. I did this when I was tubby and unsightly, because I have generally practiced yoga in environments where it is 90 degrees, 95 degrees, 100 degrees, where it is sweltering hot. And if you practice with a t-shirt on, generally it's going to be wet by the end of class, and maybe even like heavy wet by the end of class because it's so hot. So that's why I don't practice with a shirt, because it's heated yoga generally, like 90% of the time. And I have had people say, not frequently, but I have had people say, oh man, you have to have a shirt on. The ladies won't feel comfortable. They'll be intimidated. It's, well, wait a minute. She's got on a bikini top. What the hell? How can you have on a bikini top and you know, are fine, not intimidated, not worried about intimidating anybody else? But me not having a shirt on and not being close to you, it's not like I'm coming to stand over and be all next to someone. That is intimidating. See, that's why I said the entire space is about catering to white women, which is a lot of the system of white supremacy. Affirmative action caters to white women. Just going by the evidence. Anywho, but shirt or no, they are not intimidated. Major takeaway. Not intimidated by the black male. If you think you are burly, black, a lot of melanin, lift weights, bench press 5,000 pounds, I can get an anemic 80-pound white female teenager and she will bring you to your knees, maybe by herself. That is the power of the system of white supremacy. Show you better than I can tell you. Nobody is afraid of the black male. Let's see. We'll hit the phone lines. I don't even know how that got started, other than just people lying and saying that they're afraid of black males. I don't even know how that got started. That is the entirety of the system of white supremacy, showing absolute disregard for anyone classified as black, male, female, child. Who's afraid of black males? Charles Barkley has that book. Matter of fact, Charles Barkley has that book. I think that's a cowbell. Who's afraid of the black male? And then Michael Bennett, who used to play for the Seahawks, has that book. It came to mind because I was at the library and they had that book out front. His book is called Things That Make White People Uncomfortable. It's not black males. Black males do not make white people uncomfortable at all. They know how to deal with black males and quickly. Black people in general, but especially black males. Folks who dialed in, if you all have a thought, question, gripe that you want to share, again, if something does not make sense, feel free, *61, if you would like additional details, any thoughts on a better way of dealing with that situation or having a code for dealing with these types of skirmishes that happen randomly in public. Let's see, person who called in from a block number, if you have suggestions, questions, comments, feel free.
I guess I'm not able to speak right now, but hopefully in a few minutes.
Gotcha. Much obliged. We'll check back in later, see if you have or hear your commentary. Other folks, if you all have any questions, thoughts, suggestions, feel free. As I said, I have thought about the incident a few times. This happened Sunday morning, so I've had a few days to think about it. I did contemplate, because I had a class to teach on Sunday after this happened. This was Sunday morning, and so my class was late in the afternoon on Sunday, and they have in yoga what they call personal shares. So this is where either before class or after class, you take a few moments and just, you know, something that happened in your life. It can be, you know, we're taking a trip, we're going hiking this weekend, thinking about that, or I'm going to visit relatives this weekend, anything, just whatever your personal share is, and relating it to what the theme is going to be for class, or what, like, an idea or something that you want people to kind of think about as they move through the class. And I was going to make that my personal share. And the way that I was going to phrase it was, I was threatened at a Sunday morning yoga class. And ahimsa, that is the number one rule. That is the first rule. Yamas and niyamas that I talked about with yoga. That is the first rule. Non-harm of yoga. And I've had yoga instructors, like, we were questioning, do you teach this posture, or would you do this for a pregnant lady, and blah blah blah. Ahimsa, no harm. Like, that's supposed to be a guiding principle of what's happening here and why you do things, and that is supposed to be on and off the mat. As I said, the postures, that's like the youngest aspect of what is called, what is recognized as yoga. But it's supposed to be about justice, treating yourself correctly, treating other people correctly, treating the planet, the animals correctly. That's, you know, all supposed to be encompassed in this practice on and off the mat. The postures are just supposed to help you to get in that line of thinking and action. But ahimsa, that's how I was going to explain it, that, you know, we come on our mats. We're supposed to be guided by ahimsa. That's on and off the mat. Just to kind of keep that in mind, to be mindful of that, of how we function in space. I did not make that my personal share because I wanted the white studio owner to be present so that if there was any gripes, accusations, oh my gosh, came in, intimidated us, or he called me a racist or anything like that. I wanted her to be there so that she could hear exactly what I said. So if there are any questions or controversy, that sort of thing, she was not there. The computer malfunctioned, so she was out doing that. Took her a while to even get around to the class, so I ended up not sharing it. But I did have that on my mind to talk about that directly in the class, that I was around whites in a Sunday morning yoga class, and was threatened. That happened just hours ago. I am still here and ready to teach, but ahimsa is supposed to be a guiding principle in our conduct. And perhaps I will be able to share that down the road. I'm teaching tomorrow. I'm teaching Sunday. So I do have other opportunities to make that a personal share. It can be risky. I've said that for years. It can be risky talking about racism in a workplace environment, especially if you're just talking, not asking questions. Can be dangerous, something that I generally discourage. This is a slightly unique work environment where racism does get discussed on a pretty, I won't say regular basis, but, you know, racism does get talked about. So we'll have to update. Maybe I'll update that for workplace racism when I can make that my share for a class and what the response is. But ahimsa, that is what all of this is supposed to be about. I guess I'll add that if we have any non-white yoga instructors who teach, think you might teach at some point, ahimsa. Mr. Fuller talks about that, being able to talk about justice. That is rule number one. You cannot be a yogi and get in trouble for mentioning ahimsa. That is number one on the list. That's what everybody should be thinking about. Ahimsa, do no harm. Do no harm. Do no harm. I would bring that the same way that he says, just talk about justice. I don't talk about racism. I just talk about justice. I just talk about ahimsa. Make that your thing. You can make that a theme for all of your classes, and just talking about not doing any harm on and off them. That would be the emphasis, because that's the way they do it in class. Whatever the theme is, on and off the mat, ahimsa. Satya, being truthful about things. That would be an important one. On and off the mat, have some integrity, not just making up accusations to charge people with. The number to dial, 605-313-5164. The code, 564-943-pound. Press *61 if folks have any questions, suggestions about the codification, how things were handled. If you have any thoughts, a better way that is always, and I mean always, appreciated. We are trying to refine and get better. I guess my addendum, if there were to be one for all of this, I have talked about many incidents of terrorism with yoga, being kicked in the head, stalked, threatened, falsely accused, massive report to come, where I haven't even detailed the worst of it all. But all of that aside, racism, white supremacy would happen regardless. You're going to be mistreated whether you do yoga or not. That is, you know, the problem, what we're trying to correct. Yes, I have experienced quite a bit of white supremacy racism while practicing yoga, but it has been super helpful for me. I do not have to go practice with white people. As I said, I had been practicing at home a lot before the summer, before I started taking the Sunday class, and I still do that, practice at home, so I don't have to be around a lot of people. It's not even about that at this point, in terms of being around other folks, not being around other folks. I'm just trying to enjoy all the benefits that come from yoga. I feel like non-white people created the practice to begin with, and white people stole that too. I mentioned asteya, non-theft. White people stole that, like they steal everything else, including people. I view it as reclaiming something that is ours to begin with. Every time I practice, that's the way that I think of it. Every time I teach, that's how I think of it. And it's so helpful. They have therapeutic yoga that can be a part of your physical therapy, doing specific types of yoga to heal your body. And I know people, that's what they teach. That's something I would love to get training and certification for, that you can use yoga to help people heal their body. That's what I mean. It can be such a healthful practice for people, particularly to help you deal with stress, all of the terrorism that we get. I mention that all the time, things that can help us replenish, refocus, detoxify from everything that, you know, is all of the terrorism that we experience under the system. For me, and I think for a lot of other people, yoga can do that, or at least be a part of that process. And whites, I feel like they just, like with everything else, they hoard all the things that are good. Anything that's horrible, fried chicken sandwiches and Popeyes and all the rest of it, they'll dump that on us in loads. But yoga, they'll make it really expensive. They'll make it expensive to get the teacher training. They'll make it expensive to take the classes. Some of the times they may even make some of the equipment expensive. And it's not like you need a lot of equipment, but they make those Lulu Mom shorts are not cheap. The yoga mats sometimes are not cheap. Like, they can make it, an exclusive thing, something that's supposed to be so easy and just you being able to move your body, and you don't need all these machines and heavy equipment and all this other stuff. Like, literally, just you can go and be with a blanket and exercise and take and really work out most of the major muscles of your body and do something that's going to make you feel a lot better, can be super helpful for your thinking, to help you sleep better. As I said, calm anxiety, can do a lot of things, can even help. I'm prenatal certified, can even help if your baby is in breech, if you're having difficulty in labor. They have postures that can help with that, that can help ease labor. I've been Cal's listeners who are pregnant, I've been telling them they have stretches you should be doing every day that will help your pelvis region prepare for a labor, something the body does automatically. But there are stretches, exercises that you can do that will enhance that whole process so that you can be ready to roll when it's time for labor. I mean, that's extraordinary. Just stretches, things that you can do with your body. And like I said, white people hoard that. So there is a reason I continue to practice in spite of all of this, that I do see a lot of benefits to yoga. Same way, you know, you go to work or try to do anything else that is constructive, go to the bank or try to go out and buy a vehicle or take a trip someplace. You try to do things that are constructive in spite of the white supremacy racism that will be inevitable, whatever we try to do. Even if we just tried to stay in bed all day long, there'd be racism with that too. Sometimes they don't let you, if you're a non-white person, sometimes they don't allow you a spot to place a bed. The number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks, have any thoughts, questions, as I said, suggestions, always looking to improve on better way of dealing with a situation. If you would have said less, if you would have said more, if you would have just left, I guess that's always an option too, since I didn't mention it. I guess I could have got up and left immediately when she came in late, and or once the exchange started at the end of class, at any point there, I guess I could have got up and just left then too. So leaving is always an option, and sometimes that is the most sure way to make sure things do not escalate. There are no unnecessary problems. If you can exit the area, leave. And Mr. Fuller says frequently, sometimes that is the option that should be taken. Just leave and forget that. We do not need any extra conflicts. Racism, white supremacy is conflict enough for us all. True. Any other folks, suggestions, comments they want to share? Suggestions, always take those.
Ivy Hertz.
Ivy, yes, ma'am.
Man, that is something. Well, greetings, Dustin. Greetings to all the callers on the line. That's really something, what you're dealing with. It's so interesting. You know, I remember sharing the incident that I had with the hostile Asian woman at the pharmacy, where she said that she was getting a prescription together. And it was cold and it was nighttime, and said that she would wave me down, for lack of a word, when the prescription was ready, because I was, you know, just going to wait on it. It's only going to be like 20 minutes, and she just left me there. But what's interesting is that I went to an international market the other day, because that's where you can get a lot of healthy food, and you can get it for good price, for decent prices, for some of the best prices that are available. I'll put it that way. And there was this Asian woman in there who was, you know, very hostile. I can't remember the first thing that she did, but I remember, well, I think possibly the first thing that she did, that she was just, she had very hostile body language. And I remember it was that she seemed to be irritated that I was in there and that I was in her same aisle and all of that. And then I went and asked her where something was, and the way that she said that she didn't know, I knew she was lying and that she wasn't even listening to me. And then that's when I realized, you know, that what I was sensing from her before was definitely hostility, and that she was angry. Because I think, like, irritated is like a pretty word for angry. I think it's a way to minimize, you know, what's really going on. But then later on, she did something even worse. She did something violent. We were crossing paths. We were in front of each other, so she was coming toward me, and I was coming toward her. And as she was coming toward me, she seemed to be going to my left, so I went to my right. What she did with her cart is she made a sharp turn to my right, right where I was crossing. And obviously, with this being a cart, if I hadn't stopped, I would have gotten hurt. So I really, you know, I trip off of that, and I think, you know what I mean? Like, why are you people acting like this? Why are you people hostile? I really don't understand it, because it's like, you know, you got your money. It's like, why don't you just take your money and be happy for the fact that, you know, you make a living wage, you know what I mean? And you're not in a situation that we're in where, you know, we don't make a living wage. I'm not saying that you don't get mistreated. I'm just saying that, you know, I understand that there are certain things that you can't do because white people are going to come for you. I understand that, you know, you can't, white people let you have a lot of Asian markets and things of that nature and grocery stores and all these different things and these businesses and all that. So you can have the money that you have. So you can have the net worth that you have. So you can have the wealth that you have. And that if you went, you know, and you hired a bunch of black people, a bunch of people who, if you were to do the right thing, as they say, meaning you go and you help the people who need the most help, that would be black people. We don't have jobs. We don't make a living wage collectively. So if you went, you know, and you hired us because we need jobs and things of that nature, the white people who allow you to have the things that you have, they're going to shut you down. So I understand that, you know, you don't do those types of things, but why you are, like, mean to us when there are not even any white people around and things of that nature, I really don't understand that. And I'm sure there's, you know, some reason for it and things like that, but I'm just really, I'm really confused at their hostility. I'm not confused again about, you know, the hiring practices and things of that nature. But I mean, you could, I guess, just not hire us with a smile or whatever the case may be. It's like, you ain't got to be trying to kill people with your carts and, you know what I'm saying, leaving them outside in the cold and doing terroristic things, like, you know what I mean, making them just stand out there when they're waiting for something as important as medicine, you know, like white people do, because they, you know, they're terroristic like that, and they will deprive you of medical resources and everything like that. So I just don't understand why they go as far with it as they do. And that was it, at least for now. But I just, the last thing, I guess, I just want to reiterate that I'm sorry that you dealt with that, and I just, that's just something. Anyway, I'll mute my line. Thanks, guys.
Much obliged, Ivy. I'll just say briefly before I get the next caller, in terms of the hostility, I think that in my view, it just shows the success of racist woman, racist man, racist child. They promote hostility against black people. They promote that it's justified. That's the racist jokes. So frequently the punchline is some sort of violent act against a black person. Whether it's President Obama or just any random black person. So frequently that's what it's about. So that's what's manifested, hostility against black people, whether it's leaving them out in the cold at the pharmacy or trying to run them over. And we've heard that from a whole lot of people. That's not just the first time, trying to run somebody down in the grocery store with a grocery cart or threaten them in a yoga class, whatever it is. That's what's manifested. And it's every day, all day long. White people, non-white people, even other black people, a lot of times, hostile against other black people. That's what's promoted all day. Usual suspects, unless I'm in error. Let's see. The black female caller in South Carolina. If you had commentary, you should be with us as well, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Gus. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Greetings to you and the callers and the listeners. I am very sorry that that had happened to you. It was just yesterday that I was thinking, well, not yesterday, but a couple of days, I was thinking about how certain things that happen to us, and we believe that they're tragedies and they really uproot us. And when we look back on them and we see that something great came out of it. And I remember that unfortunate situation you had with your flood, and it pushed you to take care of yourself. And because of that, you know, you pretty much reinvented yourself, not only for yourself, but for the good of other people, other black people as well. So I'm really sorry that that happened to you, but I can relate to your story. Because last year, it's been about a year, I joined a wellness center in my area named after Charles Drew, a black man. And it has an Olympic-sized swimming pool in an area that's down the street from two HBCUs in my area. And you know, in South Carolina, well, in a lot of the United States, a lot of the world, actually, blacks weren't able to swim with white people for a long time. So this area is quickly being gentrified. So that area had a pool before the wellness center was built. It had a pool named after Charles Drew, the surgeon, and it was in a black part of town. And they wouldn't come and swim. Of course, that was our pool. It was the pool for black people and their children. And it was an outdoor pool. And we weren't allowed to swim in their pools, and they would never come into our neighborhood. But now that they built this wellness center, and it's huge, and it's state-of-the-art type of thing, and the area is being gentrified, they are there in droves. As soon as the place opens, 5:45, they're there with their, you know, all their exercise gear and their swimsuits and their towels and what have you. Okay, so I joined last November because I wanted to join the fitness center, and I don't necessarily do well with equipment, you know, treadmills and Stairmasters and things of that nature, and I don't do well with structured classes either. I learned that, but I do love to swim, but I've never been able to swim laps, and that was a goal of mine. So I started by doing water aerobics classes just to build my strength and stuff like that. And after a while, I got bored with it because, like I said, I don't do well with structured classes. So I said, you know what? I'm looking at the lanes, and it's like six lanes, and there's always white people swimming back and forth in them lanes. And we're over on the side going, jumping up and down in these aerobics classes or doing whatever we do in the shallow part of the water. And the white people got them lanes. I mean, they got them lanes. And that kind of pissed me off. And I said, you know what? I'm going to teach myself to do laps. And I did it. I started out slowly on the short side of the pool, on the deep side, but the short side of the pool, but it's deep. And I started doing half laps there until eventually I got in there and I started backstroking laps. Then I taught myself how to swim full laps, okay? However, there are only six lanes for swimming. What often happens is at a certain time of the day when they get off work or what happens, when people get off work, that's when they come to swim. Most of these white people come to swim early in the morning and around the time they get off of work. And sometimes all the lanes are full. So it is a lane, and two people can get in a lane. So they'll often come and they'll share a lane with you. But they really do ask, okay? They'll say, can I share this lane? So, you know, but it had never happened to me before because I just learned how to do my laps, right? So it had never happened to me before. So one day I was doing laps and I stopped and I came up at one end and there was a woman, a white woman. She said, she asked me, and I had my music in my ears. I have an aerobic MP3 player. So while I'm swimming, I'm listening to music. And I looked at her and I can tell, you know, she kind of pointed down like, can I swim next to you, right? Can I share your lane? So I didn't hear her, but I can see what she was saying. So what I did was I pointed to the left side of me, like letting her know, okay, you can have this side because it was the last lane in the pool. I'll take the wall side, you know, because I'm learning to swim anyway. I'm doing my laps. One of the things I have is with alignment, I always wind up on the other side of the lane sometimes, you know. So I said, well, if at least I have the wall, I'll have better alignment. So I pointed to one side of me, the left side of me, as to say, okay, you can have this side. Well, she took it as I told her, no, go swim in the other lane, like the other lane to the left of me. And so she kind of looked at me. And so I didn't think nothing of it. I'm like, why is she looking at me? I just told her to swim to my left. I didn't think nothing of it. So I just, you know, I did my little flip, and I just kept swimming. I look up. Next thing you know, she's sharing the lane on the left side of me with somebody else. So I think she thinks that I told her, no, you can't swim here. Go swim someplace else. So I left that alone. I didn't say anything. I didn't want to be bothered with it. But here's my thing. Really and truly, to be honest with you, I don't want to share nothing with none of them because of the simple fact that there was a time that they wouldn't want to swim with me anyway. And the only reason why they're there is because they're gentrifying that neighborhood, and that's a part of it. Already, there was a housing project two blocks down where two people died. And they shut that housing project down and kicked everybody out and spread them all over this, all over one side of South Carolina. Okay? Two people died. It was a black housing project called Allen Benedict Court. You can look it up. And two people died. And the thing about it was that they said, oh, they died of a gas leak. Well, I think people have been dying there for years because there was a lot of paperwork about it. But in any event, the neighborhood is being changed. They kicked everybody out of that housing project, and it's empty. So now you got all this land over there that's this, you know, this empty housing project right next to this wellness center, right? What do you think in an area that they're gentrifying? They're going to fix everything up really nicely, and they'll be right over there with their dog parks and everything else, okay? So that's, I just don't want to share anything with anybody. So what I did was during the summer months where I live in my neighborhood, we have two pools. So during the summer months, I didn't even go back to the wellness center. I said, you know what? It's nice. The weather is nice. It's nice and sunny out here. They have like nice those pool chairs and stuff and tables. I'm just going to swim locally. I'm just going to go right down the street to the pool, and I'll swim locally. So I won't be bothered with that. So now it's getting, the pool closed, and I hadn't swum for a while. So I'm planning to go back tomorrow, and we'll see how it goes. But that's just the way I feel. If anybody can give me some advice as to what to do, when somebody asks me to share a lane, the only thing that I would be greatly appreciated, the only thing that I can think to do is leave. Stop what I'm doing, get out of the lane, and go and swim in the deep part where I had practiced all that time. Because there's generally nobody in the deep part over there where there are no lanes. Because I don't want to share anything with it. If a black person comes and asks me, I don't have a problem with it. Come on in. But one of them comes and asks me, I don't want to share anything with them. I want to leave because of the history. And it's strictly because also there's no black people over there swimming. And they wouldn't even be there if they wouldn't doing what they're doing to that neighborhood. I hope I wasn't long-winded. Thank you for listening. And I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, caller in South Carolina. Hopefully for the betterment of other people, yoga, trying to take a little bit better care of ourselves, hopefully betterment of other black people, victims of racism. And always enjoy hearing black people, victims of white supremacy, challenge themselves with something constructive. Always think that that's good. Existing under this system is certainly a challenge, but finding ways to challenge ourselves, strengthen ourselves, especially in ways doing things that black people are not supposed to do. And frequently that pretty much means anything constructive. So, yeah, that's grand. With the sharing, I don't know. I mean, it seems like you kind of already kind of have your decision, right, about what you want to do. I mean, with the incident where you were kind of telling her she could be here, you just wanted to be on the wall, and she, misinterpreted. I mean, whatever, that's on her. As for moving forward, I mean, yeah, if you already got your code that, I don't want to share at all, and to just send that message, have that be the case every time that I just vacate the lane and go swim in the other, the deeper part of the pool. If that's going to be your code, they'll probably say something to you about it, I would say, because white people tend to be observant in that manner, and that would be like peculiar behavior from their niggers. So they'll probably go and, I mean, they like my man Dylan Roof, South Carolina's finest, said he considers himself very well versed on racism. And so I suspect the white swimmers are too. So they might ask a question eventually. Is there a reason you don't want to swim with us? Like, I'd have my codified response for that ready. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like you already came to a conclusion, about what to do on that one. You don't want to share a lane with them. So yeah, I would just say stick to the code and be prepared, because one of them probably will question if they see that happen like once or twice in terms of you just vacating the lane when they come to ask. But yeah, just stick to your code. Sounds like you already got a conclusion. Let's see. Other folks, if you all have any thoughts, suggestions, feel free. I do think it's grand when black people, not that we're, it's not show offism in my case, although it's that is definitely worthy of consideration. But I do think if it's something constructive towards replacing white supremacy with justice, and it's something that black people, non-white people generally are not allowed to do or are not showcased doing this activity, that I generally think it's constructive. If you get opportunity to do that and then you can, become proficient, I generally think that that is constructive. Get into spaces where black people are not permitted and to try to learn. Mr. Fuller does encourage, try to learn something about everything that is constructive. Try to do that. Let's see. I think this is Imhan DC. Should be with us as well. Did you have a suggestion, commentary, sir? You should be with us.
Yes, sir. So I heard part of the situation with you at the yoga studio. I think you were saying a lady came late and then there was an altercation, and maybe it was a non-white lady, maybe a black person, and that you left the yoga studio and you don't want to return there, and that she was going to lie about the entire incident. Do I have that correct?
In a nutshell, more or less, that's the gist of it. Non-white, non-black person, non-white, non-black female.
Okay. One of my suggestions is something that's kind of difficult to do, and that's buy a piece of property. And I know that's really difficult to do. But if you did that, then there wouldn't be another authority aside white people in general, besides white people in general, you know, but there wouldn't be another authority that somebody can go and complain to about you. So that would solve a lot of issues if you were able to buy a space. Maybe you could do like a dual space where it's both commercial and residential. And but if you can't do that, maybe you can rent a space. And that way, again, you wouldn't have to deal with anybody except the landlord and then white people in general. And I was going to say about doing yoga. I've found that inversions are very useful just because, you know, when I was taking yoga classes, I was just wondering about some of the inversions. And I asked my teacher, and she told me to read the book. And so I did. And the book was saying that the inversions allow for the blood to gather on the top side of the organs, if I'm making sense. It's kind of like if you have a bottle and it's full of water, or maybe it's partially full of water. If you flip it over, now that top portion of that bottle that didn't have water touching it now has water pulled in that area. And so the same thing with your organs. The top part of your organs don't get a lot of blood. And so when you are upside down or when you're inverted, it allows for blood to be pulled to gather on the top of your body, you know, if I'm making sense. And so the other thing I wanted to say is I think that every human being needs to do yoga and get massages, and that not doing that makes you sick. It's important to get massages, have somebody to massage your muscles. I've found that I think that there would be less killings if we did that, even with the system of white supremacy. There would be less killings. We would be able to think more clearly, and we would work harder towards solving the problem if we were doing those things with our bodies, because it makes you having that blood with all that information that blood has. And having that nutrients go to all the parts of your body is very important, and it's vital. So that's what I wanted to add.
Much obliged, Imhan DC. I'm all for yoga and massages for all. I can already attest daily yoga has made a spectacular difference. I don't do daily massages. I have not been that fortunate, but always wonderful. I think when I got that massage, that was 2017 when my back was messed up. That was spectacular. I definitely would encourage more massages for all. In terms of, the inversions. For folks, I guess, who don't do yoga, inversions generally are considered any position where your hips are above your heart. So that would obviously be any of the like headstand postures, handstand postures, downward facing dog, technically just doing a forward fold, you know, like to touch your toes. Technically, that would be an inversion. Anything where your hips are above your heart is generally considered an inversion. They have lots of wonderful benefits. I try to include those when I teach, at least some mild. You can do it at the, legs up the wall. If you just go lie on the floor and scoot really close to the wall, I think we did it at the retreat, and then let your legs take them up the wall vertically, and so that your back is on the ground, but your like thighs and heels are on the wall. That is an inversion. Your heels are above your heart, allows the blood flow to easily get back to your heart to be replenished. That right there, gentle inversion. Even pregnant ladies can do that one, no harm. As for the space, I have space now where I could practice, although I'm not sure if there is a space that you could practice under the system of white supremacy where you could not be reported by someone. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think Matula Shakur was reported for doing acupuncture in a private space and ended up having to go to greater confinement. So I'm not sure if there is a location you could go and not be reported to some white authority. But be that as it may, I do know. Yeah, I do have other options to not practice there, a variety of options. That's why I'm not returning to that location. But much obliged, Imhan DC. If other folks have either suggestions, as I said, if there are better ways of dealing with that incident, if other folks have had some sort of similar incident at trying to attempt some sort of fitness enterprise and had similar difficulties, I guess that is certainly related and welcome to share as well. But 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you have commentary.
That's not a question.
Let's hear your question.
Why were you compelled to say something about the situation? The last thing I remember is that she was making snide remarks, and you said you ain't gonna say nothing right then, but that you're going to say something after class, and then you went and said what you said to her. Why didn't you just leave?
I did think about that, and I have been in yoga classes before where I left, where spacing was an issue and or people came late to class and disrupted me. I have left, and that is something, you know, that I've thought, like, you know, if I go to a class and anything is, you know, seeming awry, I am not, you know, having any sort of incident, I am exiting. It was class. I think it was just the fact that class had already started. I guess they do in physics. They have a concept called inertia. That's one of the principles. Things that are in motion tend to stay in motion. Things that are still tend to stay still. Class had already started. The momentum was in that, like she was, like I said, it was, could have been like 10 minutes late. I didn't have a clock in front of me. So, I mean, but I mean, this was not a, oh, okay, we're going to get started now. And then they walked in. Like we had been rolling for a few minutes before this gang of, truant folks came in. So, you know, it did enter my mind to leave. But I think just having already been there and having gone through some of the postures and like I said, I had been going to this class for a while. It's just like, you know, I'm not, that was literally what went through my mind. I'm not moving. Like I'm not moving anymore. I'm here. And that's that. Like, I'm not going to be inconvenienced anymore. Like, this is my spot. I'm planted. That's literally what went through my mind. Like, not leaving the class. I'm not even moving an inch from my yoga mat. Like, I am planted here, and that's that. And I literally sat there for a while. Like, I didn't even do any of the sequence for a while, just to kind of sit there and kind of get that energy away from me. And then I kind of rejoined in the sequence.
So you're saying that you were compelled to say something to her because of how late she was?
Oh, I did not answer that question. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. You were about to answer, so go ahead.
I did not answer that. I thought, unless there were two different questions, but yeah, I did not answer that question in terms of why I was compelled to speak to her. I think I just answered the component in terms of why I didn't just leave, in terms of why I said something to her, because I felt she was like incorrect in multiple ways. It wasn't just the tardiness, it was the tone, to have an expectation. And that might even be another one where it's like, if I were white, would she have behaved in the same way? Like, it wasn't just that she was late. It was the tone that she took after I didn't move anymore. Like, you know, get the hell over. What's wrong with you? Like, I'm not sure if she would have talked to a white person in that manner. And either way, it was still like, wow, to come in and be late and then to be curt about, you know, you want more space to come in and you're not even on time. Like, wow, like, I am going to say something about that. That is a violation. Like I said, that's a violation directly of, in my view, yoga principles. That's a stay. That's time theft. Like, I was in the middle of my sequence and enjoying my class, and now I have to stop and accommodate, you know, you late folks. And that needs to be pointed out. Like, coming to class late is not just, yeah, something, you know, that's not that in and of itself. As she said, respect begins with being on time. So I felt like pointing that out, that her behavior was incorrect. And as I said, if she had concerns about all that, let's try being on time. That was why. Does that answer the question? Why I said something?
Oh, yes, it does. It sounds like it just comes down to black self-respect, and the way that I interpret what she did, it seems to me like after she came in late and, you know, was being incorrect, that she tried to bully you by trying to make you move and all that, and accommodate her incorrect behavior of coming in late. So, yeah, thank you. I'm in my mind.
I thought, I didn't say that, but that's what I was thinking too, like in the moment, like black self-respect, like, no, I was here, and, you know, just for you to, whatever you were doing that caused you to be late, I get here on time. I've never been to that class late. Like I said, I've been to 1,500 classes, and I think I've been to 4 where I was late. I've never been to that class late, like, regardless of what is happening, transportation, whatever it is, sunny, rain, I'm on time. And not just on time, I get here early to make sure that I can get a choice spot because I have concerns about space. So yeah, I did interpret it as black self-respect to just say, yeah, it is not cool for people to just come in and already be discourteous to everybody here by being tardy. And then, as you said, to come in and be a bully about the space and be nasty and demanding. And like I said, just the way that she talked, like her energy, the energy that she presented at the beginning does not surprise me that this same person later on would end up threatening and lying. Like the energy around, I'm going to go and falsely accuse this person and start fabricating my story about what he allegedly did wrong. That same energy was present from the very beginning before it even got there. So, yeah, I did. Even though I didn't use that term, I definitely felt black self-respect. Like, I'm not just, you know, going to have her come in and behave this way and not say anything about it. Anywho, black self-respect, so important. You will need probably a lot more black self-respect than you think, because sometimes you will have to have black self-respect for you and maybe three or four other people who are a little lacking mm-hmm. in that area. Like, that is very, very, very common, and you can highlight boldface print because I myself have ended up in many situations like that where other victims of racism kind of low on black self-respect. I have been on fumes there myself many times. Who hasn't in the system of racism? But when you don't have that black self-respect, man, you can allow all kinds of just really foul, and it gets noise. Exactly. I think Ivy, when she brought up about, you know, the the so-called Asian female tried to run her down in the grocery store with the shopping cart. I said that hostility gets normalized. Just that sort of foul treatment of black people gets normalized to everybody. That's how everybody thinks of and treats black people. And I think having black self-respect can help you in pointing out this is totally incorrect. What is happening here? This is, you know, this is not a humane way of treating people. This is not how you'd be treating me if we were not in a system. This is not how you would be treating me if we were in a system of justice. This is not how someone classified as white would be treated in a similar situation. Like, pointing that out consistently, because it happens, I was going to say daily, but that doesn't do it justice. It happens on a millisecond by millisecond basis. And just having lots of victims of racism who also are acceptable, have normalized this hostile and violent treatment of black people, and just the way that we think about and talk about black people. Like, it can really allow for lots of that. It can allow for, you know, oh, I'll move all the way out of the class. I'm not even supposed to be here. You're right. Let me pack up my mat and go type of, I mean, it can allow for a lot. It can allow for a lot of really bad things to happen once you don't have a sufficient amount of black self-respect to say, hey, I am being mistreated and that is not okay. I am going to say something about that right now. Dr. Wells.
Do you have a timetable for your I think you said that there's a forthcoming broadcast about Anna Brown Griswold and how she, you know, mistreated you and all of that.
Well, there'll be a written report first because it's so detailed, and I need to give like such a detailed timeline with like quotes and all of that, their emails. So there needs to be a written, lengthy written report to detail everything that happened, which Anna Brown Griswold is front and center, one of the main culprits, racists within this incident. But the written report will be first, and then the audio will follow, because I don't think I could, that incident, like it took me about an hour or so, give or take, we'll say 50 minutes to describe the incident that happened on Sunday. Now that's just one incident that happened in a yoga class that was over in 60 minutes. Like, there was no follow-up afterwards, no emails, no phone calls, no nothing. 60-minute yoga class, it took me probably about 50 minutes to explain all of that. The situation with Anna Brown Griswold, that evolved over months. That involved so many people. And so, I mean, there would have to be a written report so that everybody could have a record of exactly what happened. And then I can like do highlights or answer questions type of a thing. But I'm not sure I could do like a program and discuss, because I mean, it took months, and there would even have to be some catch up because it goes all the way back to that kicking incident. Like I would almost have to explain like an entire year and a half of my yoga practice to explain this incident adequately, because it goes all the way back to that kicking incident. Like, like the kicking incident would have to be explained in its entirety. And then we could move forward with Anna Brown Griswold. She was on the program. People can go back in the archives and hear that. Then we can move forward with the actual. Now, what happened this year that is connected to all of that? Like, it's Woo! It is massive, easily the most traumatic incident that I've had in yoga, or other than the flood, like it's right up there because it was such a long and just ugly ordeal, public, and yeah, just report coming. So once I can sit down to, and there was additional information. White people always, they withhold constructive information. There was information that I did not have, that I didn't tell months after all of this happened. So it has taken some time to synthesize everything that has happened and to be able to process all of that in a cohesive manner to like give a narrative that explains, like I said, it reveals so much about the system of racism, white supremacy, hiring practices, who is legitimate with regards to speaking about racism, white supremacy, what is the question that, who's most informed about racism, white supremacy, white people or non-white people? That came up directly in all, I mean, everything, almost all of the key aspects of white supremacy racism that we talk about were directly on display. Cowbells galore, the cowbell, my goodness. And what I talked about with this incident specifically from Sunday being threatened, non-white people, I don't care if they're black, non-white, non-black, whatever it is, if they are not white in the yoga environment in this part of the world, I expect them to be white identified. I do not expect that they will have my best interests at heart, or we're going to be friends, or we're going to talk about racism, or we're going to have the same views. I do not expect any of that from anyone who is non-white in this part of the world who practices yoga. I expect they'll have about 50 white friends and will find some way, shape, form to minimize, justify, explain away racism, white supremacy. Report forthcoming.
It's going to be on your blog?
I'm going to try to publish it on multiple sites. It should be on my blog and other spots as well. But I will definitely promote it and will definitely encourage you all to share, to make, to go out and contact anywhere Anna Brown Griswold is going to speak, to make sure that they have a copy of the report and to let them know she is an admitted racist, Anna Brown Griswold. She does not have credentials to be out talking as a so-called anti-racist. That is absurd. But yeah, once the report is out, I will make it super blatant where it is, where you can find it, where you can read it on my blog and elsewhere.
Do you think Asians' involvement with white people, because like they have the highest rates of marrying them and stuff like that, do you think that that has a lot of impact on the hostility, just the further brain trashing that is, in such close proximity to them?
It could, but at the same time, you know, I hear a lot of black. Well, I could take it from a number of different ways. There are black people who live right here in the United States who are hostile against other black people, verbally, sometimes physically, sometimes both. And they aren't in tragic arrangements with white people, but they're still hostile to black people, either in word or in deed, sometimes both. I've heard black people who were not born in this part of the world, and they also are hostile to black people. I've heard a lot of black people from the continent who said that they heard bad things about black people, to not, you know, be involved with them. They're dangerous, that sort of thing. And so they have extremely negative views about black people and avoid them and are sometimes hostile in the way that they talk about them and or treat them. So at least in my view, it just seems that is what this system promotes. Everybody having a hostile view of black people. Some people, it is manifest in different forms. Sometimes it's more intense than others, but there seems to be, even in Jamaica, they say there are lots of black people hostile with other black people. It just seems, for a variety of reasons, that can be manifest under this system. I think just acknowledging that's what white people want, everyone to be hostile and find reasons to be violent verbally, physically, with black people, that's encouraged worldwide, and just trying to call that out, work against it. Is that, does that Does that not make sense? Do people think that that's not accurate? Are you all seeing something else?
Well, what I find to be an interesting, what I consider to be a contradiction, is that Black people are the most criminalized group, not the most criminal, that would be white people, but the most criminalized group. And yet, we're also the most abused group. So it's like, you got these images out here about us being so violent and criminal and all this and that, and all of this dialogue about us being that, and you know, all these, you know, statements and things of that nature about us being that, and yet no one's afraid of us. Everybody just, you know, abuses us and just, you know, ignores this, just this lie about, you know, just Black people in general just being criminal, when of course, you know, that's white people. But I just think that's interesting that you're not, you know, afraid of these people that you claim that you view as so criminal. That was real mean, my mom.
No one is afraid of Black males, Charles Barkley or anyone else. Not at all. The person at 7433, if you had commentary or suggestions, definitely accepting suggestions if you heard the situation. Did you have commentary to share?
So, no, I just was commenting on the comment about other Black people coming from other places being told not to interact with Black people over here because there's a non-white Black male at my job. He's from Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And me and him, we talk a lot. And sometimes we have like little small casual conversations about racism, but you can't be too out in the open with it.
Amen.
Because they'll be saying that they go talking crazy and we might both lose our jobs. Mm-hmm. So we have to be real discreet on how we talk. But he said the same thing. He said when he came over, right before he came over, this was almost 20 years ago, that was told to him right before, you know, when they were, you know, coming over, like, you know, hey, don't interact with, you know, Black people. They're crazy. They're violent. He said they were showing, he said that they were showing videos of gangs and stuff like that. I'm like, God, I'm like, dang,
this is
crazy.
Watch that word crazy. Dr. Welsing said that. She used to say that all the time. Watch that word crazy. That's not crazy. That's exactly what I said. That is the system of white supremacy. I'm sorry for interrupting, but words are important. You said another thing.
Oh, no, another thing is, I know workplace racism on Fridays, but I had to say something. I've been wanting to call in for a while. But I work around nothing but non-white people. Like there's one white guy, but he's Spanish. He's Spanish, but I still think he's non-white, but he's white identified. These guys, man, these non-white guys at work, man, it's almost like you working with white people, and you know, they do have white overseers, but they work at another location, but they do monitor where we work. And man, these guys, man, they let them like disrespect them, and they wear it on like a badge of honor. Like, oh man, watch this guy, man, he'll curse you out and laugh it off. And I'm like, no, this is not normal. So what's your suggestion on, besides limiting your contact, like, what's your suggestion on that? Like, how do you handle, like, non-white people who, you know, respond to white people in like that? Like, with just such anti-Blackness, like, it's disgusting almost, man.
Workplace racism, neutralizing workplace racism, Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. There is a reason we come on weekly to address this very issue. With, I think, when I was talking to Ivy a little while ago this evening, I said black self. She mentioned it. I didn't even say the term, but she mentioned black self-respect. And I said, you know, sometimes you have to have, you know, more frequent. I said, you'll have to have more black self-respect than you think, because the other victims of white supremacy that are in your presence, you'll have to have black self-respect for what they're missing. And it sounds like you mentioned exactly what I was talking about. It sounds like there are a lot of victims around you who do not have a high level of black self-respect. And that's not surprising. That's what this system is designed to produce. That's how you keep a system going. You have victims who are okay with victimization. So they, you know, will tolerate, you know, being called in, particularly in a workplace situation. Like, oh man, like a whole lot of victims of racism, especially if you don't have a code in terms of how to respond and how to deal with problems in a workplace so that those type of things are not happening. You're not being called names and such. You might tolerate all kinds of incorrect treatment. That's, you know, total annihilation of black self-respect. And that's how you end up with victims who end up in danger, where they end up overweight. We talked about that. The yoga, that's where all this started at. The program this evening was talking about yoga, self-care. But you can end up being in a really dangerous position where you just take all that abuse at work and then calling you names, calling you smiley nicknames and things like that. All of that. I mean, it can really do a job on your health and well-being. So what I would do if you're in that sort of environment, I would try to promote what I said before. It would be all about promoting justice. I've suggested for some people in the past, if there's a lot of name calling and talking bad about people, if they do have policy and procedure in your workplace, I would look in the policy and procedure, which you've already read in its entirety, I'm sure. I would look through the policy and procedure and try to see if they have anything about workplace decorum, in terms of etiquette on the job, that sort of thing. If they have anything directly about that, if they do, I would highlight, boop, and go in with that specific page. And I would phrase a question in some form of, we do have, you know, on page 43 here, where it talks about just how we're supposed to conduct ourselves. It seems like there's a lot of name calling or cursing or just, you know, not really talking about people in a manner that's encouraging productivity. Seems like it might not be in line with what's on page 43. Is there any way that we can maybe make that a little bit better so that we have a more productive, maybe a more courteous work environment? I would try and phrase it in that way. If it's a lot of it and there's something in policy and procedure, that may be one. I would definitely, I know Dr. Welsing would say, I would model, because that might work. It might not. If you bring it up about, you know, maybe we can talk to each other in a more courteous manner, I would model courteous behavior. I would not participate in any of the nicknames, the name calling, none of that. I am going to be super, because you said this is a lot of victim. I would be super courteous. Man, I would be competing every day. I am going to be the most courteous person here. I am holding the door. Mr. Johnson, Miss Jackson. Oh, man. Help. Good morning. How I'm speaking. I am going to be the most courteous person I can be. Like, if I think this is a bad, I'm going to try and do that and see if I can get at least a few other people. Maybe they'll catch on. I'm going to try to be courteous. I'm at least speaking, always saying good morning and good evening and that sort of thing. Not calling me names every time I go down there. I feel like I'm about to bust somebody. Like, if you could just model that, that can have a huge impact in a work environment. I've seen that myself. Where just you are about being courteous, especially if this is a lot of black people. Just be the most courteous person. That's going to be my, I'm going to be the most courteous person here every single day. Try to redirect Mr. If you can borrow from Mr. Edward Williams. I played the counter racism segment before. If it's a lot of that talking bad about people when the name calling, how can we help that person to try and redirect things back to a more constructive place? I think that can be helpful as well, in addition to the non-participation, which I think is huge. But it's tough. I've been in those environments. Pam used to talk in frustration about working in those environments where it's a lot of victims of racism who are confused and, you know, just talk back or accept being talked to in any kind of way and or talk to each other any old kind of way. What you said about the your coworker from Nigeria, I've heard. I mean, that again, that's how successful the system of white supremacy is, where everywhere around the world, that's what they got multimedia propaganda. He said they got videos ready. Look at the Negroes. Look at them. That's how effective the system of white supremacy, probably in HD too. That's how effective the system is to get everybody to think, yes, these are people the world would be better off without. We should have a plague. We should. What is it? The Purge. We should get rid of that movie, made millions of dollars, probably billions now, but millions of dollars around the world. Was it centered around violence against black people? I'm sure they saw that in Korea. I'm sure they saw that in Japan. I'm sure they saw that in Nigeria, London, Canada, just go all the, and, you know, Alabama and everywhere else too. I mean, system of white supremacy is very successful. Any other folks?
One more thing, guys.
This year. I'm yes, sorry. Sir.
I was called a racist because, I told a guy I don't go around trying to sleep with white women.
Uh-oh, cowbell on that one. Definition. Was this at work? Was this at work?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
I'll mute my line on that one.
Wow. Workplace Racism, Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Wow, I don't even know how such a conversation would come up in the workplace. My goodness, like, woof. I don't know the context, but that seems like something where I would have probably hit the stop button a paragraph or two before we got to anywhere where I would have had to think about a response like that in a workplace environment. Like, whoa, I came to get something out of the copier. How did we get whoa. New topic. When is the next meeting for the budget for the upcoming fiscal year? Like, let's get back on task. Made me lose my train of thought. I was going to say, what is your definition of racist? But once I found out what the allegation was attached to, like, that is not even appropriate anymore. Like, why are we talking about this at work? Woo. If other workplace racism is Fridays, the book club is tomorrow. Do we have any other suggestions? He did ask a question. Any folks with a suggestion on how you would deal with, I guess, a lot of low black self-respect in a workplace environment where victims are talking bad about each other and or, you know, it's all right if you want to call me names, curse at me, that sort of thing, and I don't have a problem with it. I might even think it's cool that you call me these type of names. Any suggestions for functioning in that environment?
Can I be heard?
Imhan DC, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I have been considering, what do I do about hostile encounters? And the best I've come up with is de-escalate, escape, and avoid. I've watched a number of videos, like surveillance video footage, about violent encounters or near violent encounters, or actually, no, even suggestion violence is violent, but there were violent accounts, and the best outcomes were when people chose to try to de-escalate the situation with their words and their posture, you know. Getting away from the person, you know, escaping and just avoiding the situation and move on to a better situation. And then the other thing I wanted to mention about the inversions is that it helps your hair grow because now you have a whole lot of blood at the top of your head, you know. So like your feet gets a whole lot of blood. You can make your head have a whole lot of blood with gravity pulling the blood down to your hair follicles and making your hair grow. Thanks.
Much obliged. I am a big inversion fan. Can be. I do one at the wall with blocks. I generally start my practice that way. Can hang upside down for a long time, really. Good 5 minutes or so. It's great. Spinal decompression. Spectacular. Let's see. And de-escalate, escape. That sounds very similar to what Mr. Fuller recommended about trying to minimize and then evade if you can. If you can get out of that situation, that is preferable just in the system, because things can become explosive and generally not in our favor as Black people. So to try to keep that in mind and get out of that situation if you can. I think it would have just been a matter of getting dressed, which is after I reported her, I did get dressed, so I was able to leave promptly. But I think if I had really been focused, I could have just reported her and got dressed and got out of there much faster. Yeah, always try to be kind. That is one thing I am super pleased about the yoga studio where I teach at. There are lots of exits. If there's ever a situation, oh man, it would be very hard to be trapped someplace in that yoga studio. Like, lots of exits. Like, oh man, you can get out of there easy. Any other folks with suggestions, comments, questions, they want to make sure they get in? Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Everybody satisfied? Got all their thoughts, questions in for the evening?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Our Black female caller, South Carolina.
You said something earlier about white people stealing everything,
mm-hmm.
including, I think you mentioned yoga.
Yes, ma'am.
Correct,
yes,
but,
ma'am.
Okay. Yeah. So a few years back, I came across something called comedic yoga. Are you familiar with that?
I have not practiced it myself, but I would say superficially familiar. Like, I've done a little bit of research, and I have taught. There's some Cows listeners who actually have taken comedic yoga classes, and so I was all, you know, super excited and curious. I was able to talk to them about it once they took the classes, and some other listeners have experienced. They've taken like some of the comedic yoga classes, and they've talked to me about it and sent links, potential guests and things where I've been able to check it out. So I'm certainly not an expert. I'm still ignorant and still need to learn more, but I'm superficially aware of it.
Yeah. So I think that's comedic yoga is kind of like our solid proof that they did steal it from us because it's nature-based from what I understand. You know, there's cobras involved and, you know, and I think a lot of it has to also do with comedic deities and things of that nature. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. That was pointed out, like the studio, not the studio where I currently practice, but the studio where I did my 200-hour teacher training, they had they're still there. They have statues of different deities, and they're in different yoga postures, and they're some of the like more ancient looking statues that are more common that you would see in the studios. But the hair, it's like those are cornrows. Like a non-white associate of mine, he came to the studio and the white people there were rude to him, And he was like, look at even the artwork that you have on the wall. Those are not white people. Like, you all have, you know, appropriated everything. Like, you've appropriated this. You're practicing racism with that. You're practicing racism in how you're talking to me. Like, it's all just racism, which it is, even in the exclusiveness of it, because they were restricting access to him to the studio at that time. So, I mean, that's all of it together. But, yeah, I view all of it, like, whether it's the practice that's the comedic practice, or even the way that it's done in the studios, all of that is non-white people, black people that they just have taken and then booted them out and, you know, won't even have it there. We'll put a liquor store there before you can get a yoga studio in an area where it's going to be black people. So, yeah, I felt that for a long time. Other black people just taking back what is ours. White people have stolen lots, yoga included.
Do you think that white people intentionally price us out of fitness? What I mean is that most of the things that enable you to practice efficiently are so doggone high, we can't afford them. I know, like, and I'm not trying to, I'm a natural hair care practitioner. That's what keeps the lights on for me since I retired from New York, right? Black women will not get in the water because of this hair situation. And I've noticed that that's why a lot of them stay doing like water aerobics and things where they don't have to get their hair wet. So, I mean, there's not only do they price us out, they stigmatize us regarding certain sports, like, you know, it's something that we can't do. Do you understand what I'm saying, if that makes any sense?
Oh, absolutely. The pricing us out, like swimming generally is expensive, or at least I know for a lot of people, that's one that's expensive when they start talking about why you don't see like black dive. Why don't you have like black Mike Phelps and that sort of thing, diving champions, and that's expensive. Like, to have access to that sort of pool access and training access, and then you might have to have all the time access, like not just the little time that they allow you at the Y or the public pool. Like, you might have to have daily access at 6 a.m. or 10 p.m. or something like that to train. Golf, or you just go down the line of things that are constructive in terms of fitness, Pilates or anything else really that you want to think about. That even eating well, we don't have to talk about fitness, we can talk about eating well. It's the same thing that a lot of times getting quality food, depending on where you would, I won't even say that, generally speaking, getting quality food is going to be more difficult if you're a black person, particularly if you live in an area with a lot of black people. So it's, in my view, it is, I've just come to a conclusion of that all of that is done deliberately. So we have to be just as deliberate about having a counter-racist code in those areas. I know that they're going to try to make it so that it's really difficult for me to have some sort of fitness routine. How am I going to counter that? I know they're going to make it really difficult. I know they want me to be at Popeye's every day. They want me to be one of those hoodlums out in the street elbowing people for a chicken sandwich. I know that they want me to be tubby. Oh, I know that. So what's going to be my counter-racist plan to make sure that I'm, even when they make it difficult, even when the only, you know, healthy store where you can eat at is, let's say it's 30 minutes away. That's the healthy grocery store. Mm-hmm. What's going to be my plan to work that out so that I'm not eating chicken sandwiches, I'm not eating unhealthy food, so that I have healthy food on a daily basis? Because I know that's their plan. I know that's exactly what racist, that's the way that we have to think. I was not thinking that way, really, for most of my life, even during the existence of this program. But I mean, yeah, that's the way that you have to think. If you do not, very likely, Dr. Ruby Latham, when she talks about her inspirations and she starts tearing up talking about family members that she lost because they had a bad diet and ate really bad food that racists, dumped on us, and then all the stress and poison and everything they put in the water and everything else, and you end up not being around as long as we should. So it's going to be tough anyway. You can eat all the correct things and exercise and still end up not being here because of racism and white supremacy. So it's not a cure-all, but at least we want to try and do the same thing I say at the end of the program. That's why we don't drink. That's why you buckle up. Same thing. Mindful about what we eat. try to get in some exercise so that we can have the vitality to solve this problem, because it is going to take a substantial amount of time and energy to put white people out of business. But yeah, and I've seen that they lots of things to make it difficult for us to be able to exercise and get all the wonderful benefits of feeling well, eating well, and taking care of ourselves. Absolutely, they make it hard.
Can I be heard? I have one more thing.
M. Hondisi.
Yes, sir. You mentioned about the statues with cornrows. I was at a Buddhist temple in my city, and it was a Vietnamese temple, and their statues have Bantu knots, and the Vietnamese can't put their hair in Bantu knots. Neither can white people. But I thought it was interesting. And the statues, their noses are white, like a black person. Now, but they're racist. like everybody is against black people, and it's in their religions. And so they had pictures of like a storyline picture, and it was a picture of dark-skinned people, like African-looking people, attacking these real light-skinned East Indians. And it just continues on, and it had a lot of imagery where it made the dark-skinned people look in a way that people might call it devilish. So I asked the people, what did it mean? And the adults wouldn't give me a direct answer. They gave me an answer. But when I asked the child, I asked some of the children, and one of the male children told me that the dark-skinned ones are demons from hell, and that they attack the prophet. And I thought that was really interesting. They're not white people. The Vietnamese are not white people. But at the same time, I suppose white people... Well, I know white people have gone all over the world and put in the religions and other parts of society for many nations, all the nations, to be against black people. So, yeah, that was interesting.
Strongest religion on the planet, the system of white supremacy. It is. The power worldwide is extraordinary. This problem can and will be solved. I think someone does stress that needs to be said. But I do think it's important to be honest about the monumental task before us. And again, global in its scope. We are not talking about something that is just, you know, a United States problem, North American problem, known universe, the system of white supremacy. Any other folks with comments, suggestions, questions? Grant, we'll assume folks are good. I will hopefully not have anything else yoga related to report for a while. I love it when it is bland, regular old day. I can get through practice. No big deal. Hopefully that will be the case tomorrow. Either way, I will be here to report. We'll be here for the book club. 5 p.m. Eastern. Excuse me, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Our third installment on Dr. Gerald Horne's Paul Robeson, The Artist as a Revolutionary. We'll be here for Workplace Racism on Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and the compensatory call-in this Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Much obliged for the folks for tuning in live or archived. If you are in the Seattle area, if you are interested in taking a yoga class, tomorrow I'm teaching. That is at the ungodly hour of 6 a.m., but more reasonable Sunday afternoon. If you are interested in doing a class, drop an email. I can give you all of the information. You can come out and do a little yoga. No harm. We can sneak in an inversion, simple one, and enjoy let me know, untiljustice@gmail.com. And again, I can get you all the information. Come do a little yoga. Other than that, thanks again for tuning in. And Black self-respect, cannot emphasize enough. You can, you know, drop an email if you have thoughts or questions about the incident, suggestions on how it could have been handled better. Black self-respect, just be mindful. Mistreatment of Black people is widespread, even by other Black people. Replacing white supremacy with justice is supposed to be about doing away with all forms of mistreatment. And just saying that there's a new standard about how we are going to conduct ourselves, and we are totally done with the world that says, yes, Black people should be treated in the shabbiest manner possible, that day is done, and that I am going to model that myself and demand that in how other people treat me. I won't say demand because we don't have that power yet, but definitely make it known that I do not accept people just talking to me any type of way, that, you know, sort of thing. We should be done with that. Replace white supremacy with justice. That should be reflected every day in how we talk to and treat one another, especially other Black people. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Let's take care of our brain computers so that we can think in a coherent, logical manner to crank out new concepts, solutions to the problem, racist woman, racist man, and racist child. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in an automobile, driver, or passenger. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with the Amber Geigers, Daniel Holtzclaws of the known universe. In addition to being buckled up, if we are driving, we are not on the cell phone at all. Just trying to take the small steps that we can to try to stay as safe as possible. It has been, I am close enough. I do have Dr. Welsing's book. She mentioned Black self-respect so many times. Woo! A Black Oath, a Pledge of Allegiance for Black People. I pledge allegiance to my own Black self-respect and to the respect of all other Black and shades of Black people on planet Earth, all of whom are victims of the system of racism, white supremacy. And I pledge to use all of my life energy, intelligence, and creativity in all areas of people activity to eliminate the global system of racism, white supremacy on planet Earth, and to replace it with justice so there can be peace. So help me, God. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.